Welcome back. You're watching Stockwatch with me, Zinathi Guma, tackling your stock-related questions this evening. Our Alex Days from Umthombo Wealth and independent analyst Chris Gilmore. Don't forget to send those questions via SMS to 41392, email stockwatch@bdtv.co.za, or tweet us at BusinessDayTV using the hashtag Stockwatch. Thanks, gentlemen, for your time. I'm quite surprised by the market's sentiment today. Really largely in the green. We've seen the US, all the bosses there in the green, and we also saw a turnaround in the JSE today. It was in the red earlier on, but eventually ended the day almost a fifth of a percent up. A little bit of a mixed picture in the European market side, but largely green there. And it's surprising to me because the last week we did have the market upbeat on hopes of a reopening when it comes to an easing of the zero COVID strategy, but that hasn't happened. And we also did get disappointing economic data coming out of China. So Chris, just starting with you, I mean, what do you think is responsible for the upbeat mood in the face of still negative sentiment coming out of China?
So Nati, I think a number of things. I think we're looking at a situation in the US particularly where the perception is that the interest rates are getting close to peaking, okay? Maybe not peaked yet, but getting very, very close. And if that's the case, then, well, hello then, we're on another roll, you know?
Yeah.
I mean, really, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
So we're probably going to see the Fed funds rate peaking out at maybe 5%. And, you know, I think a lot of damage will have been done to the U.S. economy by that time. I don't think a lot of people quite realize just what is actually happening to the U.S. The U.S. economy still is in reasonably good shape. But, you know, the longer this goes on, the worse it gets for the U.S. economy and for many other economies that are taking the strain from from higher interest rates. So I think it's a misplaced optimism in many, many ways.
Mm.
You know, are the earnings that we're seeing, are they that great? Not fantastic. And I think they're going to be hurt by higher interest rates. But, you know, let's make hay while the sun shines. Let's not get all precious about it.
Yeah.
We'll take it.
Alex, do you think that the optimism is misplaced when you look at the U.S.? Because, I mean, as much as you have this headline economic data coming in signaling that, for example, the U.S. labor market is still quite strong. We had that jobs data coming out on Friday. But you're seeing, though, on the ground, the labor market kind of starting to loosen. We have this report of layoffs coming in Meta, and of course we've seen other companies coming out and saying that they will be laying off people or slowing hiring. So what are you making of that difference in data that we are getting?
Good evening. I mean, first of all, look at how steep interest rates have been. It's the highest in history. So that will no doubt have an impact on the economy, online consumer and business, etc. For example, if you look at some of the data, we're seeing mortgage applications are coming down substantially. We're also seeing credit card debt is going through the roof. And at the same time, savings have dropped substantially. So that tells you that the U.S. consumer, all of the savings they've been able to accumulate over the COVID period, they're starting to spend that now because of high inflation, etc. So I think it's just more of a delayed impact. There's no doubt the slowdown of the economy is going to come. I think 2023, 2024 is most likely going to be very difficult or the United States economy, and you're going to start seeing unemployment picking up. For example, seeing the numbers from some of the big tech companies, but you can imagine some of the smaller enterprises all over the country will start retrenching people as well, just due to input cost pressures and so forth. So at the moment, the U.S. consumer is still resilient. They're doing okay, but there's also some pocket of data which indicating weaknesses around the corner. So I would say you should be cautious. You know, at the moment, we are in a risk-on environment. We've seen the very strong market movements in October, now also last Friday. But the fact of the matter is people are still very uncertain about the future. And you're going to get this so-called relief rallies every now and again, and then perhaps a bit of a pullback later on.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Talking about that delayed impact, of course, with the last print, we did see that unemployment ticked up to 3.7%. But I guess we could start seeing an uptick of that in the coming months. Let's take a look at the drama that is unfolding when it comes to Gold Fields and Yamana Gold. Of course, now on Friday, we had the rival bid coming out, a joint bid coming out from Pan American and Agnico, with Yamana now saying that that offer, it's a cash and share offer, saying that it is it's superior to the Gold Fields offer. Of course, Gold Fields coming in and saying that they will not be changing their terms of that offer. What are you thinking of that, Chris? Because it seemed that from the jump in Gold Fields shares on Friday that the markets are actually, or investors are quite happy about the fact that that deal might not see the finish line between Gold Fields and Yamana. Chris, are you still with us?
I'm frozen. Everyone's frozen there.
Oh, dear. Can you hear us now? All right, Chris, I'm going to be coming back to you. But in the meantime, let me just go to Alex. I will try and maybe sort that out. Alex, what are you thinking of the dynamics that are happening between Gold Fields, Yamana, and now this new joint offer?
I mean, look, when Gold Fields announced the deal, I mean, the share price dropped about 20%, and that was due to the expected dilution. And the thought was that they seem to be overpaying for this asset, regardless of what they are spending, you know, of the long-term prospects and so forth. So I think there's still a big chunk of Gold Fields investors probably not in favor of this deal. Now, with the new dynamic happening, it is interesting how this is going to pan out. So, yeah. Obviously, there's also a breakout fee that's going to be paid by either party for whoever walks away from the deal. So, on the 21st, Yamana is going to vote on the deal. And obviously, if they do decide to accept the opposing offer, it could be a breakout fee they need to pay. And likewise, for when the Gold Fields shareholders decides against it. So, I think it's still uncertain at this particular stage. How's it going to pan out? You know, also from a Gold Fields perspective, it also needs 75% approval from shareholders. And I think if Gold Fields does increase their offer price, I think that it increases the likelihood that shareholders will vote against it. So they're quite in a difficult position. They need to hope that the existing offer somehow gets the votes. But for them to up the ante, it's going to be difficult to get the shareholder vote approval, in my view.
Yeah. Chris, I hope you are back with us and you can hear us. So we're talking about the Gold Fields and potential Gold Fields and Yamana deal now coming in with this rival bid from Agnico and Pan American. So, I mean, this is a deal that has largely been considered by shareholders to be quite expensive. And, of course, Alex mentions that Gold Fields is in quite a difficult position because you're still waiting for shareholders to vote on the current offer. Now, increasing that would kind of increase the odds of shareholders voting against the deal. So I'm just wondering on the options that Gold Fields has at the moment, because this is an all-share offer and the rival bid is coming in with a cash and share offer. So we know that Gold Fields is not going to up that price, but do you think that they would maybe have an option of kind of restructuring those terms?
Look, I think any offer that has a cash underpin, even partial or full, probably stands a better chance in this kind of environment of succeeding. But to be honest, I haven't really followed that one this closely. But I would have thought that anything with a cash offer probably stands a better chance than something that's all shares.
Yeah, indeed. Alex, do you think also on your part that this other rival bid stands a better chance because they have that share option as well?
Yeah, I have to agree with Chris there. I mean, in this environment, cash is king, and you know, some sort of certainty regarding cash, I think, will certainly have a preference over shares. But incidentally, as Gold Fields share price is going up, it also makes the offer a little bit more attractive as well. So there are some interesting dynamics at play here. I think only time will tell how it's going to play out.
All right. So I think we all agree that financially that rival bid looks better. But now coming into a strategic fit kind of scenario, does Gold Fields not stand a better chance in terms of the strategic benefits here? Chris?
Whew, I don't know. I really haven't looked at that closely, to be honest. And I'd be sailing by the seat of my pants if I offered an opinion on that one.
Do you have an opinion on that one, Alex?
Look, I'm always, let's call it bolt-on acquisitions, I would say you can assess. Whenever there's a so-called transformational deal, like we're seeing here, that is so enormous in scale, I think you always have to be very careful. You know, most likely there will be more disappointment going forward. So, if I was a Gold Fields shareholder, I probably would have preferred not the deal to go through. because of this size of the scope of this deal and the fact that it's in a different country, jurisdictions, etc. This increases the risk, regardless of the potential benefits and so forth.
Yeah.
You have to look at the amounts involved and ask yourself what can go wrong.
Yeah.
And it, what material.
All right. So, well, let's take a look at some of the questions that are coming in. We have one on Telkom. What does the panel think of the Telkom share at 36 Rand? Is not similar to MTN when it was trading at 63 Rand last year in January. Chris, what do you think of the Telkom story? Do you think that this is a buy opportunity at 36 Rand, considering also that they might maybe get another knock on the door from MTN, and we could also see also some of corporate action coming out of Telkom?
Look, I think they were very, very lucky when they got that got the nod from MTN. Look, as far as I'm concerned, I'm going to be brutally frank about it. Telkom is yesterday's story. I mean, really, they've been trying very, very hard to modernize, to actually come kicking and screaming and fighting into the 21st century. But it's a dead old company there with dead old ideas. And I wouldn't touch with a barge pole, frankly.
Alex, would you be touching Telkom at these levels?
Yeah, I have to agree with mostly what Chris has to say there. But at the moment, if you want to buy Telkom, I mean, it's more for speculative purposes, right? So you're trying to bet there's going to be some sort of deal that's going to be beneficial. But if you look at Telkom as it is operationally and as an investment case by itself, there's a lot of issues they need to overcome. Business doesn't generate free cash flow. It's quite ex-growth. It needs to reinvent itself. And if that current management and shielding structure, and you can imagine the amount of people that's involved in the business, it's highly unlikely it's going to happen.
Mm. Right. There's actually another question on MTN. Is MTN a buy at these levels, or should one wait for the share to come under pressure before getting into it? Chris?
Yeah, look, it's going to go through times when I don't know what if it's a particularly good value at this point in time. And there are always going to be problems with MTN because of the kind of jurisdictions in which they operate. They're not scared of going into some really, really difficult places. And it's quite incredible how they've managed to succeed in some of these jurisdictions. So, look, I think you just have to be a little bit careful, because from time to time, you are going to see MTN getting into trouble through no fault of their own.
Hmm.
I mean, this is an incredibly good company. It really is outstandingly good operationally and in every other metric.
Yeah.
But, just buyer beware, that's all.
Okay. Just quickly before we go to break, Alex, your thoughts on MTN, because we have seen some of the moves that the company has tried to de-risk the business, of course, even though there are some risks that persist and some others that are coming into the fore.
Look, my share price has been under a lot of pressure year-to-date thus far, mostly because of all the forex headwinds they've got and the slowdown in some of these economies, like, for example, Nigeria and Ghana. So that makes it very difficult for them to operate, then also to extract that cash out of those markets, right? So those are some of the issues which is causing some fund managers some sleepless nights, and as a result, that's why share price has sold off to some extent. But there's also a lot of corporate action opportunities still in MTN. I mean, we're going to see quite a few updates, most likely Q1 of next year, the fintech as well as the towers business and so forth. And the valuation is not expensive in my view. So I think if you do take a medium-term view and are willing to stomach some of the cyclical headwinds that Chris is referring to, then perhaps it's worth opportunity to buy MTN at these levels. But I'll be careful if your horizon is only short-term, because this thing can even go a lot lower as well if things continue to progress.
So Sasol is issuing the bond to refinance debt in the most part. It can convert them to shares in the future. This will be like a rights issue leading to a dilution. Or they can repurchase the bonds maybe by issuing a new bond, no dilution. Of course, we did have the markets not reacting positively to the announcement of a bond issuance. That was last week. Alex, what do you think of this bond issuance that they're undergoing right now?
Very generous dividend a while ago back. So now this puzzles, I think, market participants a little bit more. You paid a big dividend, now you're doing a convertible bond, which is going to be dilutive. All right, but so that's, I think that's the first point. And secondly, if you look at the convertible bond, you know, they've got some debt repayments they need to do in dollars from here, and I think also end of 2024. And as a result, they need, you know, some funding for that. So that's the purpose of this. Also at a decent coupon, I guess, so it reduces the interest cost. It means they're going to issue about, I think, 36.8 million shares, give or take, or it's going to lead to a dilution of 5.9% if the convertible bond options get exercised. And with our view on oil prices and so forth, we think it's quite probable that it will be exercised at some stage in the future. So I think the share price movement mostly reflected that dilution of 5.9%. So yeah, I think it's a bit of a mixed bag, but mostly due to the fact that they paid a big dividend. Now you're doing this. I probably would have preferred a more conservative approach regarding capital management, in our view.
Chris, have you had a chance to look at this? I mean, because of course there are those benefits of reduced coupon rates. They will be refinancing as their debt, some of the debt, and also using that for other operations. Do you maybe think that, of course, the markets reacted to the dilutionary effect of that, but do you think that maybe that was just a knee-jerk reaction and maybe that negative reaction was kind of misplaced?
Yeah, look, I think Alex is spot on. It's an elegant solution to their existing dollar debt. It's actually quite nice. But at the same time, you know, there are some inherent risks in the whole thing. But yeah, so the market has probably, you know, taken a view that, you know, this could be a little bit risky, and it's just taken the view to knock it in the short term. But I think a longer term, I think it's quite an elegant solution.
All right, so let's get to more of the questions. I have got three stocks I would like to buy: Apple, Nike, and Procter & Gamble. I've been looking for companies with a lot of brand power. Could you please tell me your thoughts on these picks? And if you have got any other companies with great brand power, please could you also ask the panel? So three options: Apple, Nike, and Procter & Gamble. Seeming like really, really good options at this point. Alex, your thoughts?
Look, I mean, I don't look at these companies in my professional capacity, so I don't have a, let's call it, an informed view.
Yeah.
On his businesses, I'll be reluctant to want to give advice on something that comes out and look into detail.
Yeah.
Like I said, in my personal capacity, I do own Nike.
Okay.
Nike has obviously been under pressure, specifically what's happening in China at the moment. Demand has dropped quite substantially off there. But, you know, Nike has also shifted more to the wholesale side of things. So I think that's a business model that makes sense to me as a brand that's remained strong and most likely will remain strong over longer term. But the valuation at the moment is probably not compelling. So that's something to think about. But yeah, other than that, I can't really give you informed views on those counters, unfortunately.
Yeah, all right. So Procter & Gamble did release results recently. They said that to counter the rise in input costs, they passed on those costs to consumers. But of course, with that, they've seen pressure in demand, but saying that they haven't really seen significant changes when it comes to consumer behavior, although they have seen in some of their products basically losing market share. They say that it's temporary. Just looking at that, and also Apple, of course, we know that this is a good brand. There's brand loyalty there, but also they've been warning of production issues because of China and also some demand pressures. Any of those counters that you're particularly keen on, Chris?
Yeah, look, Procter & Gamble, as you rightly say, along with Unilever, they came out with a statement a week or two ago. They've been increasing their margins because of a perceived drop in volumes. And, you know, that's going to be a trend that's going to carry on for quite some time, I think, from these consumer groups. So I'm just a little bit wary of them, because that can go on just for so long until you meet some consumer resistance. Nike has been incredibly resilient over many, many years. There seems to be no end in sight to its attraction. Apple, I've never been an Apple fan, so you're talking to the wrong person. I've always been coming from the other side, from Android.
Yeah.
And, you know, as you rightly say, they've taken a lot of strain with the Foxconn operation in China in terms of COVID and the like. That's a temporary thing. Mm-hmm. They'll certainly get over that. Are they as far ahead of the competition as they think they are? I'm not really convinced that they are. I think the competition has heated up dramatically in recent years. And you know, the days of when you had Steve Jobs coming and releasing something new and really highly innovative every few months, long gone. So I'm not really the kind of Apple devotee that a lot of people are.
Mm. All right, let's talk about some of the stuff that came out of the JSE today, and Raubex coming out with interim results. Double-digit growth in quite a lot of their key financial metrics. This is a counter that's really seen as resilient and kind of the darling in that construction sector. Are you bullish on that stock on any level, Alex?
Like, I mean, the results were not very comparable with previous periods because there was a couple of acquisitions, specifically the Baobab resources they bought. So it's difficult to get a sense of what exactly the like-for-like numbers were. But if you look at the breakdown of the results, they're doing quite well in the road side of things. So we know, of course, Sunrail's given some projects, or they've gained some projects, and they're doing well there. But there's also a lot of delays from Sunrail, so the pipeline perhaps is reducing. They've also invested quite a lot in the infrastructure side, with all the other South African construction companies really going bust or reducing capacity. They've been investing quite a lot in there. So I think that part of the business is promising, especially if renewable energy comes to the fore and so forth. But if you look at the breakdown of the profits, more than half the profits are coming from rest of Africa, which is predominantly the Bay Bridge. That's very high margin, about 25% EBIT margin. It's about five times the margin they make in SA and multiples of what they make in Australia. So that's a big chunk of business. You've got risk. This is a business that is doing big business in Africa. You know, you have to be cognizant of them. And the same also that in Australia and Western Australia, specifically Perth, but also doing, you know, mostly lower risk type of projects, but also high margin, 8%. The SA component of it is much smaller. You know, so it's not really just an SA business you're buying here. So we've got some investors need to understand that. But it still remains construction. I think the free cash flow is negative because they've invested quite a lot of capex in Baobab at the moment, which is a concern. I don't know. For me, the risks are always high in these companies. You need high margin of safety. Hmm. Raubex trading at a P of 9 odd, close to book value, doesn't look particularly attractive for us. Hmm. So we rather sit on the sideline.
Ah, okay. Chris, on your side, Raubex?
Yeah, it's a company I've always liked. I must admit, it's a very, very it's a wonderfully run company. And as Alex said, you know, its main thing is in roads. Look, I think roads are going to. I mean, it should be a no brainer. I mean, and these guys really should be doing incredibly well in South Africa. But you haven't got the political will, I think, as yet in South Africa to really get ahead and do what requires to be done. So in the meantime, they're being innovative. They're going and they're finding the business in the rest of the world. And as Alex said, that comes with a whole host of risks. I can give you a chapter and verse of so many great construction companies that have fallen foul of doing precisely that thing over the years. And it looks good for a while, and then it all comes apart. So just got to be very, very careful. I mean, the inherent risks in construction companies really are phenomenal.
All right, Redefine also coming out with their results. The market reaction there quite muted. It's only up, I think, just under a percent. So, of course, they're still experiencing pressure in office vacancies, but I mean that being made up by retail and industrial. They've also decreased their loan-to-value ratio to within their target. Do you think there's good value to be found in Redefine, Alex? Or not?
Look, the South African property sector is quite attractive, and one of our stock picks will be in the property space.
Okay.
But it's not Redefine.
Okay.
You know, we do not like Redefine, really. I think it's not a bad portfolio, and so for valuation, not expensive, but we think the 100% is will pay out, or dividends they're paying out is not sustainable. I don't think the balance is in great shape. You know, quality of earnings ain't great. Track record not great. You've got obviously investments in Parliament, which is questionable, et cetera. So for us, I mean, I think the muted response is warranted in our view. So we think there's much better opportunities. If you want to buy a large cap property space, something like a Growthpoint for us looks relatively a lot more attractive than Redefine. Also substantially lower risk in our view. So for us, yeah, you know, you can make a different case for it, but it doesn't meet our parameters.
All right. Well, unfortunately, Chris, I can't get your opinion on Redefine. We have run out of time. So let's get to your stock picks. Chris, what will it be today?
I'm going to go for one of my old favorites because it's doing absolutely nothing and has been doing absolutely nothing for a while now. It's City Lodge. We're coming into the holiday season, good and proper now. And we've got occupancies well above break-even level. And I think in the next set of results, which will come out in, I guess, about late February, early March sometime, we'll start seeing the benefits of those occupancies. So, yeah, I'm sticking with City Lodge.
All right. And on your side, Alex, what are you hanging your hat on today?
Yeah, so I'm going for Attack. So I think this is a quality business at a deep discount. It's trading roughly about 60% discount to its NAV. You know, its portfolio is quite resilient in our view, and it's got conservative valued. So despite its conservative values, it's still trading quite a big discount to some of the other South African peers, like Redefine I alluded to. And it's got a strong balance sheet. It's got a very good long debt maturity, decent cash levels. And because of the strong balance sheet, it gives an optionality to do some yield enhancing type of opportunities. For example, share buybacks is something they can do, which we think will be incredibly value accretive. Also, if you take a medium-term view, there will be probably some positive reversions in their portfolio, which will lead to nice distributable growth. At the same time, you've got option and mass, which business we also like, but they can also perhaps even sell that asset and buy back Attack. It's a lot of optionality and high margin of safety, and we think it's a very attractive capital returns as well as yield play over time.
All right. Well, thank you very much, gentlemen, for your time and for your analysis today. Thanks to my guest, Alex Dace from Umthombo Wealth, and independent analyst, Chris Gilmore. Julieta is back with Stockwatch tomorrow, same time, same place. Have a good evening. We'll be right back.